Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
High noon, Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. It is a Tier Tuesday. If you missed our tiers last hour, horror movie franchises, they are up at Jones and Keefe on Twitter and Instagram. You can go check out at Keefe21, at Jones WEEI if you want to complain. It is also a Tom E. Tuesday. Tommy Curran joins us at high noon every Tuesday from NBC Sports Boston. He's brought to you by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Tommy Curran, how are we doing this week?
I'm afraid we're going to lose Spiro and Arch.
No more Spiro and Arch games?
I don't know.
We're going to lose. It's threatening. We're going to lose them.
Don't forget about Aditi.
But listen, good news is they play all the trash bag teams. So even though the Patriots are playing better than Spiro and Arch, all their opponents are very much Spiro and Arch opponents.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, is Atlanta a Spiro and Arch team?
No, that game might be a little bit more juice. That game's got a little bit more juice. I'll give you that.
So you wrote yesterday, Tom, and this is some of what you're getting at, I'm sure. You said, with Drake May as their front man, the Patriots are ready for the big stage. You made the analogy to like a 70s band breaking out. This is the good times where they're touring and they're getting all the positive press. And you wrote this before they were even in first place, before the Bills lost last night on national TV. So what do we think the ceiling is for a team like the Patriots in 2025?
There is undetermined. I mean, it's an undetermined ceiling. I mean, we're talking about tonight. We have our email for Boston Sports Tonight going around. Our guy Rob Snyder saying, is this sustainable? We talked about it on early edition. Is this sustainable? You don't have a running game. Yeah, it's all sustainable until we see them lose because they don't have it. We've seen teams with anemic running games go deep into the Super Bowl. I can't remember which team it was. It was in recent years. Who the hell was it? But
I mean, the Colts won one year with this is going back a ways, but the Colts won with a real bad running attack until the postseason, right? Then I think Joseph Addai and guys like that broke out. Dominic
Rhodes. They couldn't stop anybody too one year, and then they got Bobby Sanders back and they stopped everybody. But the point is, this reminds me very much of the 2008 season when Brady got hurt and I think the Dolphins won the division with Chad Pennington, and it was just not an impressive season. There were a lot of teams in flux, as the Patriots were very much so in 2008. I think the Colts were in flux. So the Bills are in flux. The Chiefs are in flux. Obviously, the Bengals are in flux. And some of the teams who have promising players and are not scarred up, like the Patriots are not. The Patriots, I'm babbling here, but one interesting thing I'd love to talk about is the number of guys that they have imported this year who are making significant contributions. And I can't find anyone who I'm looking at here and saying, that was a stupid signing, it's not working out. Or can I find anybody and say, they shouldn't have let that guy go?
Yeah, it seems like a couple of their leftover guys. I mean, I still maybe go back and forth on Peppers, right? Like, because the safety play is not very good.
Even Bourne. Like, Bourne's had two really good games.
Bourne looks good.
I wasn't crying about that when he left, but he's been good since he left.
Yeah, maybe Peppers. I'm not losing my mind about it. And you see why they wanted to move on from Duggar, and they didn't, as he gets torched last week. But you mentioned the running game in there, Tom. From what you've seen through six games, the ineffectiveness, is that on the backs themselves? Is it on the offensive line? Is it play calling? Like, if it's a little bit of everything, like, who stands out in that group?
Honestly, I think I would start with Stevenson, his unreliability in terms of holding on to the ball. I think, has altered his running style to the point where he's not getting to contact and running through it. There was a play last week. They were trying to kill clock a little bit, and he was, you remember this, he was running to the right side, and it was either, it might have been a wide out, a corner came up and created a little bit of havoc on the right side, not interior, but, and he ran right into that lone place where there was chaos. I'm like, what, can't you notice that and just veer left a little bit and run around it? But I think that they are very pent up with insecurity about ball security, and they should be. So I think that really has a trickle-down effect to how they behave as they hit the line of scrimmage and go through it. So I think it starts with Stevenson, and then you can't rely on him. So you're caught between this area where you're trying to get him going but afraid of his results, and then Henderson is coming in and he's not getting enough reps in my estimation or enough time to build up his, you know, pitch repertoire. He got two carries in the first half the other day. I think he finished with 9. Just give him the ball. I really think this is a good week where they could be determined about what they're going to do with their approach in the running game. Go with the old Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick. You know what? We're going to run the ball. Get a lead, but then run the hell out of it.
Yeah, I would like to see more Henderson. But in the meantime, with, you know, his struggles, with Stevenson's struggles, with Gibson being hurt, is this a spot where you think they could make a move in the next few weeks and try to acquire a running back?
Undeniably, it has to be. That tight end depth, I think, is the other sneaky thing that I would look at. Offensive line has got some stable backups, it seems like, right now. But I would definitely say running back, tight end, not because those guys aren't performing, but because they're so indispensable, Hooper and Henry. And then I think I would like to see a little bit more defensive end depth and edge depth. So those are three big places.
How big game hunting do you think they'd be doing at running back? Your colleagues at NBC Sports Boston put together like a trade targets list. It had the Jerome Fords of the world down at the bottom of it, and then the top were Breece Hall, Alvin Kamara. Do you think they're looking that big, or are they just trying to get another body in here?
I think they'd be open to anything, which is kind of a cop-out on my part, but what will it cost for Alvin Kamara? What will it cost for Breece Hall? Would Breece Hall even be entertained by the Jets within the division? And how about while we're there on the in the division? That Mike Tomlin blasting of Matthew Berry for keeping Joe Flacco in the division was unbelievable. Did you see that?
Yes. Yeah. Not Matthew Berry.
Andrew Berry. I was like, wait, the fantasy guy? Sorry, I was very confused there for a second.
Yeah, no, he was ripping him. Yeah, that's good.
But, yeah, look, any port in a storm, you cannot walk around with a running back and a half, which is basically what they are doing right now, because relative to what Stevens should be able to do, he's about 50, 60, 65% of himself. Because his forte, I always thought, was getting to contact and fighting through it. Now he's afraid to do it, understandably so. But they need another running back, more running backs. Maybe Terrell Jennings can do it. I mean, they don't even have a third down back again. And I thought that Henderson was going to fit into that spot, which would have been nice, but they don't have a third down back again. It's just two guys.
How do you think Mike Vrabel views Tennessee? Like, there's no way this can be just another game. I'm sure there's also a sliding scale. You know, how Bill Belichick felt about the New York Jets is probably different than how every, you know, head coach thought about their previous stop. But what do you think Mike Vrabel and how he feels about the Titans?
Well, I think Mike's a little bit more, has a little more social acumen than Bill. So he's able to articulate and differentiate between every single human in the organization and the people who made the decision to move on from him. He's, I'm sure that he feels a lot of agitation towards being let go, but you have to change where you're living. You have to commute back and forth as he did to see your kids, you know, college baseball games. But obviously, as an understatement, he has landed in a much better place with a place that he probably would have preferred to have been in the first place. So it worked out great. Hard for him to be too bitter about it right now. But it's a really good place for him to walk in there and say, nah, it was pretty good. But it was interesting too, and give him credit, because this is something that I don't think every coach would do. He said, look, we didn't win enough games. I mean, it's nice to see somebody once in a while have some kind of attachment to reality about what's going on, especially among head coaches.
Talking to Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. He joins us every Tuesday at high noon. We call it a Tommy Tuesday. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Tom E. Curran. Let's get to this week's Drake Take from Tommy Curran, presented by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. I feel like every week we come on, we ask about Drake May. We're like, is he the guy? Is he a top 15 quarterback? Is he a top 10 quarterback? The question this week, Tom, is does he deserve the MVP hype that he's getting? Yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. Because MVP to me, and I was long been a voter, but it just I gave it up this year. I'm like, I can't do this. It's too much bull. And I don't know who the all pros are. But anyway, every time when I voted for MVP, I used as a standard the impact that you made on your team relative to where they'd be without you. And that's why I voted for Josh Allen last year. Team was not good. That team was on his back the entire time, and you saw it in games involving the Ravens. He did more with less and was a great player. So same thing with Drake May. I'm not saying that Baker Mayfield has a million guys, nor does Daniel Jones, but the conversation for a guy who is the quarterback for a team that won 8 games the last 2 years and now is already at 4 and climbing, and statistically what he's done, and it's not a fluke in my estimation. He's done it against good teams. He's done it against bad teams. When he plays well, they win. When he makes even a slight mistake, they lose. So, yeah, he belongs right there in that conversation.
Who do you think right now should be the favorite to win the AFC?
Kansas City.
Yeah. No, I know. That's what we kind of defaulted to also.
Because we've seen this movie so many times over the years, and the Patriots were involved in it and starred in it. 2-4 starts, 2-3 starts, 3-3 starts. And then, you know, even in 2018, the team was 9-5, and they finished the season 11-5, and none of those losses came against eventual playoff teams. Every single team was a non-playoff team. Remember they got run out of the stadium in Detroit by Matt Patricia's Lions. Mm-hmm. They lost to the Jaguars. And that team fixed it because it had a backlog of experience to draw upon, and it did. So I will continue to err on the side of those teams. Like, who will be the upstart, and how will the Patriots – we used to see the Titans get to a point, and even though they had A.J. Brown, they had Ryan Tannehill at quarterback, or I don't know the Titans' history that well, but it was Tannehill, I believe, a quarterback when they went to that AFC championship game.
Yep.
And he's just not sitting there and going like, oh, watch out, he might go off. Just, you know, you knew it was going to be a slog, and if they got there, it's because they did things defensively, or, you know, Derrick Henry had a great day. With May, there is a, as you asked me earlier about what's the ceiling, it's kind of unestablished because no one has yet shown me something defensively to say, this is something that May doesn't like and really screws him up.
Yeah, I mean,
you guys think anything?
No, I mean, you look at the AFC playoff picture. You mentioned Kansas City. I mean, Buffalo would still be there. Texters are saying, don't even sleep on Baltimore at 1-5. The AFC is that wide open that maybe you can't totally dismiss them at 1-5. I was going to ask you, Tom, about the timing of Brian Callahan getting fired.
Can I say the Broncos?
Oh, yeah.
Add the Broncos.
Oh, add the Broncos in there.
Toss them in.
They're at 4-2. You can add them in there. I'm curious if you think the Brian Callahan firing is related to Vrabel's return. And we were kind of talking this out. Keith said earlier, well, it almost makes him look worse by firing Callahan now with Vrabel coming back. I would counter with it also gives him, I think, a better chance to actually win the game since that team had quit on and tuned out Brian Callahan. Do you think the timing has anything to do with Vrabel's return?
I think it could. I don't think teams are at tune-out point yet, although the Dolphins would be evidence otherwise. I could. I do think that it, as you do, it reflects even more poorly on them to be working with an interim coach instead of the guy you decided to pick. But it does prevent them from losing 43-3 to the guy that they got rid of That's actually, you know, now you have some cover. Well, we just fired our coach.
Yeah, it wasn't even our guy. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Tom, you know,
I mean, that's next level thinking.
It is. It's possible. We obviously look into and overanalyze every single thing. And yesterday on the Greg Hill Show, they asked Mike Vrabel about Josh McDaniels' relationship with Drake May. And in his answer, he brought up Ashton Grant, the quarterback coach. And, you know, great little feedback there on Ashton Grant, but that wasn't the question. He sort of inserted that in there. Do you read in anything? Anytime people try to get him to compliment McDaniels or something, he kind of pivots away.
I mean, now you guys have me doing it. I saw the same answer. I'm like, wait a minute, are those guys onto something?
Yeah.
He's talking about Ashton Grant here. Well, the question was about Josh. So, you guys have me conditioned now.
Every nice.
Answers something about Josh McDaniels.
That's good. I guess.
Anything short of genuflection and hosannas, I'm like, why does he hate Josh?
It is odd, though. It'd be like, hey, what do you guys think of Tom Curran? And we're like, well, Phil Perry is really great. Like that would be like a weird answer.
It is. I don't understand. I don't. It might be worth a question. And then his answer will be, oh, do you really think Josh needs to have all these? Okay. Josh is great. So if we did ask Vrabel, I was just speaking in fragments there.
Yeah.
If we asked Vrabel, he would in turn make a joke out of it, I would think. But it is weird. Undeniably,
yeah.
Like Tom Brady didn't have to have heart surgery,
right?
Back when he had an open heart surgery, it's the same kind of vein already.
We can at least admit it's not nothing.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to.
There's a little something. All right, good. We'll take that as a win. Yeah. He's Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Check out his latest available there. Follow him on Twitter at Tommy Curran. Check him out on Thursdays on WEEI afternoons and every Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe. Tom, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Tom.
It.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That answer, Greg, we were crossing over this morning. He brought that up. He's like, me and Curtis heard that answer yesterday. Are you guys
kind of
breaking that down yesterday? And Greg also thinks we were kind of making something out of nothing. I'm like, I don't know. That's a weird way to answer a question about
I think
the relationship with Josh McDaniels and who gets credit for Josh McDaniels. And he's like, well, Ashton Grant. That's strange. And it's not the first time he's done it.
No, not at all. I find it odd. It's something to sort of look at, and when you're winning, I don't think it's going to come up in a bad way. Like, it is sort of like, all right, you kind of make note of it, and they're winning, and everything's going fine. If things go south, like, you could see how maybe, like, finger-pointing would take place.
Yeah.
Like, I think anytime.
I think it was already happening after the week one loss to the Raiders.
Well,
there was finger-pointing.
It's just a weird situation overall, right, where the head coach picked 99% of his staff. The 1% that he didn't pick is this guy, who I will say is doing a good job. Do I love every single play call? Of course not. But, like, he's doing a good job. Drake May's playing really well. And when he's asked about it, he first says the players get the credit, which are like, okay, fine. That's a good stock answer. Like, the players should get the credit for it. And then he's like, guys, Ashton Grant, QB's coach, which I did find interesting because Josh McDaniels is always the QB coach when he's been the offensive coordinator. I think almost every single year he sort of had both roles. That's something probably Belichick did to not pay his staff, where they were like, we don't need two guys for one job.
Bill's way of cheaping out. Yeah, that's a good theory.
Like Bill O'Brien for years, I think, was both. McDaniels was both. I mean, there was also those years where they weren't offensive coordinator, remember, because of that song and dance, and they were just quarterback coach, but they called the plays, and they wore the headset, and they did everything that the quarterback, the OC would do, but whatever. But I don't know. I think it's worth keeping tabs on, because by no means did you think Ashton Grant was going to get all this credit. You know, it is your analogy is true. Like, you say the same thing here. If somebody's like, "How's Nick as a producer?" Be like, "Well, Billy does a great job, and you should see what Billy's doing." It's like, "Yeah, we'll get to Billy. We'll ask about Billy later. We're talking about Nick right now."
No one asked about Ashton Grant.
I don't
believe anyone has ever asked about Ashton Grant, as far as I've heard in these press conferences.
I heard about his name this week.
We listened to quite a bit of Mike Vrabel, and I don't believe anyone's ever asked about him.
No.
And yet we hear Vrabel brings up his name a lot when he's asked about Josh.
Because then there was a few weeks back, and we played it then, where he was asked about McDaniels, and he brought up, like, everybody on offense. He might have brought up Ashton Grant then, to be honest, but it was like one of like five other coaches.
He brought up a bunch
Thomas
of names
Brown.
At that time, too. Yeah. So it's
Doug Marone.
It's strange. It might not mean anything.
No.
It may not be a big deal, but it's interesting to monitor and follow because he keeps doing it.
Yeah, because I think you know, if it goes sideways 10 weeks from now and something like the team's not playing well or whatever, and then there's something and you're like, oh, who saw this coming? Or like, where'd this come from? It's like, well, I don't know. They're laying the groundwork for something now.
It's been right in front of you the whole time. Yeah. We have a Key for Madness for you coming up at 12:45, as we do each and every Tuesday.
The spooky one.
At 12:45.
Ooh.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
All right. Nice.
Well, October
I
season.
I don't even know. I like to be surprised myself.
All right, sorry. I won't say anymore.
When we get to the Mad Nye. Yep. So that's at 12:45. Coming up next, let's get back to some of our Monday night takeaways. The Bills, maybe not so good. And Drake May, looking like the best quarterback in the 2024 draft class. That's right after Trending with Billy Lanny.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending Now is brought to you by the 99 Restaurants. The Boston Bruins were handed their first loss of the season yesterday. The Bees fell 4-3 to the Tampa Bay Lightning at the TD Garden. Bees are now off until Thursday night when the Bruins will be in Las Vegas to play the Golden Knights. On the Monday Night Football doubleheader, the Chicago Bears beat the Washington Commanders 25-24. And the Atlanta Falcons defeated the Buffalo Bills 24-14. With last night's Bills loss, the Patriots are now in first in the AFC East. Both teams are 4-2, but the Patriots hold the tiebreaker over the Bills after defeating Buffalo in Week 5. Patriots players are off today. The team will return to practice tomorrow to begin preparations for Sunday's matchup against the Titans in Tennessee. Yesterday, the Titans fired head coach Brian Callahan after starting the season 1-5. In the MLB playoffs last night, the Seattle Mariners took a 2-0 ALCS lead on the Blue Jays with a 10-3 win in Toronto. Game 3 of the ALCS will be tomorrow night. And in the NLCS, the Los Angeles Dodgers took Game 1 2-1 over the Brewers in Milwaukee. Dodgers starter Blake Snell went 8 scoreless innings, giving up 1 hit and striking out 10. Game 2 of the NLCS is tonight. First pitch is at 8:08. And tomorrow night, the Boston Celtics wrap up their preseason schedule against the Toronto Raptors at the TD Garden. At the 99 Restaurant, $14.99 Big Deal Meals start the week off right. Satisfy big appetites every Monday through Wednesday. Try the new grilled teriyaki chicken for flavor that's always kicking. For big deal meals and a great time, you gotta love the Nines. I'm Billy Lanny. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Come.
Buffalo losing to Atlanta last night.
Whoa!
So the Patriots wake up today in first place, Keith.
First place.
I guess they went to sleep in first place, depending on how late they stayed up. They should have been watching.
Oh, yeah. Should have been locked in on this. First place.
Nice little first place slumber.
Good spot to be in.
But there are two takeaways to it. One is, all right, the AFC remains wide open. Maybe the division is there for the take.
They control their own destiny.
But definitely that.
Yeah.
The other is that Atlanta game in a couple of weeks maybe is harder than we were giving it credit for.
Definitely tougher. I think you can scratch off like Cincinnati, maybe Baltimore. We'll see if Lamar's back for that one as far as games that you thought might be a little bit tougher. Hell, even Miami, I don't think you thought was going to be as bad as they are. So the schedule got even easier based on what we thought it was at the beginning of the year, which is saying something because that was part of the reason why so many of us picked them to win a bunch of games. But yeah, Atlanta, I would say tweak that one. You know, right now you have Tampa Bay and the Buffalo rematch is like two tough games. Two of what? 10, 12 games left remaining on the season? Like it's, or 11. So I think it's 8 games with teams with losing records. So, I mean, it's Buffalo, Tampa, and I guess Atlanta. Like Atlanta's, that'd be a good test because Atlanta's like probably the NFC version of you in a way where like they're trying to, it's kind of open in the NFC. They have a winning record. They just beat Buffalo, so they got to be feeling pretty good.
They have a second-year quarterback who I think played okay last night. Did he hurt his finger? Like, what happened late in the
game? Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Their quarterback is worse than the Patriots quarterback, but top receiver and their top running back are a lot better.
No, they have some good skill position players. I know you're down on Pitt Sr. over there.
He stinks.
But they have some good position players. So, look, we said all along, these four games after Buffalo, they already won the first one in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. It's Tennessee this weekend, then Cleveland, and then Atlanta. We said the whole time, win three out of those four and we'll be happy. 2-2, I'll be disappointed. So if they trip up at the end of it against Atlanta, yeah, going into a potentially massive game against Tampa, I don't think that'd be the end of the world. We'll come in and complain the next day and break it down and say what bothered us. But I don't think that'll be a big deal at the end of the day. Top of the AFC is now Indianapolis all alone at 5-1.
Indianapolis with Indiana Jones as their quarterback.
Correct. And their defense has already been put on fraud watch by Shime. So look out for
Shime
that.
Shime put him on fraud? Oh,
yeah,
that's right.
Oh, yeah, he did that. He did that yesterday. I heard it.
We talked about fraud watch.
Pittsburgh is 4-1. They've already had their bye. Begrudgingly, I guess we got to give them a little credit. They beat the Patriots head-to-head here in New England, but I'm not sold.
Well, at the very least, Tomlin's going to keep his no-losing record thing intact, right? Yeah, don't you feel like
like I'm going to lose on that one.
Yeah.
I said all offseason this will be his first losing record with Aaron Rodgers. I'm probably going to lose on that.
No, they look good.
And the defense was miserable the first 2 weeks of the year. They've fixed that for sure. Mm-hmm. Chargers 4-2. Pats 4-2.
Whew!
Playoffs started today. They're in. They're hosting Buffalo, who's the 5 seed at 5-2, the top wild card.
That's a good game.
Followed by Jacksonville and Denver at 4-2. Kansas City is 3-3 on the outside of the playoffs looking in. They feel like the scariest team in the AFC. Nick was just saying this in the last break. Florio had his power rankings. I was reading through. But Nick highlighted this. The Bills have really beaten nobody. They're 4-2. They're still plus 650 to win the Super Bowl. So good odds to win the Super Bowl. I would still tend to say, based on their body of work the last couple of years, they're probably one of the best teams in the AFC. But here's who they've beaten. 1-5 Baltimore.
Yeah, but Lamar played that game.
Lamar did play that game.
Yeah.
1-5 Miami.
They stink.
1-5 New Orleans.
They stink.
0-6 New York Jets.
Maybe the worst team in football.
Those are their wins.
Yeah, they're not good.
Now, look, the Patriots have beaten a bunch of trash, too, but at least they beat the Bills head-to-head.
No, the two good teams they played, they lost to. Or the two, like, above-average teams they played, they lost to. So you think the story over the last 2 weeks is more Patriots arrow up or Bills arrow down? I mean, maybe nationally it might be more Bills, but I think locally it still should be the Pats.
Yeah, I guess I would answer it Bills arrow down, which sounds negative, but it's not. It's a positive thing for the Patriots.
Yeah, yeah.
The Bills, we thought 2 weeks ago, were a cut above maybe the entire conference. And now they're kind of just in a jumbled mess with everybody else, which tells you, I mean, you can dream about getting the number one seed in a bye. Like, you're not that far away from it. You're closer to that.
Dream big.
Than we thought the Bills were to being running away with the conference. I mean, that to me is the story of the last 2 weeks. So I'd probably argue a little bit more Bills arrow down. But the Patriots are definitely better than we thought, and they're closer to the top of the AFC than we thought.
Well, they're very tied together, clearly, because of the win 2 weeks ago head-to-head, right? If it was just the Bills losing two random games and then the Patriots having the same record, it wouldn't be the same. You have that head-to-head win. So I look at it more, though, for the Patriots, because they could have won 9 or 10 games without beating anybody good. They could have won 9 games with all wins over teams that are going to end the year with, like, 3-4 wins, and you'd been like, all right, you beat the bad teams. You were sort of a gatekeeper for the league. But they didn't. Their first opportunity to play a really good team, because I put Pittsburgh to the side. They have a really good record, but to me, they're not Buffalo. And maybe I'll change that in a couple weeks. Maybe we'll have to all give Pittsburgh more credit. But right now, I don't look at that as like a measuring stick game. Buffalo
was. I think that's the right way to do it, yeah.
And they won that game. So you're like, all right, if they can beat Buffalo in Buffalo on Sunday Night Football and then not have a letdown and go on the road and beat New Orleans, that kind of legitimizes the win. You know, I heard Boomer Esiason talking on the morning show about how even like the Carolina blowout looks better just because you followed it up with a real win over Buffalo.
They're 3-3 with the potential coach of the year and Dave Canales. Yeah.
I don't know about all that, but they are 3-3.
Well, they are 3-3.
And somebody said the Carolina win over Dallas was one of the best wins of Canales' career, which I would argue certainly is.
I mean, it's up there.
It's
on a short list.
On the very small list of it. But no, I mean, things are definitely going in the right direction for the Patriots. I mean, there's no other way to spin that.
So, Buffalo, not as good as we thought.
Right.
Patriots, better than we thought. Right there in the mix in the AFC. And not just as a playoff team now, but, let your mind wander a little bit. Dream about being at the top of the conference.
Dream a little dream.
Because, the teams in front of you are not, they're nothing special.
The four best teams going into the year, or at the very least, the four best quarterbacks, and I think it was unanimous. You might have ranked them in different order, but Mahomes, Allen, Lamar, and Burrow are the four best quarterbacks in the NFL. And all four of their teams are worse right now than we thought. Kansas City and Buffalo aren't bad. They're just worse than we thought. And then Baltimore and Cincinnati are like, I mean, Burrow's done. So, like, those teams are out of it. So that just means there's probably two playoff spots up for grabs. There's the first round bye up for grabs. There's home field advantage up, like home field even in the first round up for grabs, where I think we were ready to say, like, it's going to be Cincinnati or, you know, is it going to be Kansas City, Buffalo AFC title game, or is it going to be Baltimore and Buffalo? A lot of people thought Baltimore, Buffalo, they opened the season against each other. It was a shootout. They're like, all right, see you guys in 3 months. But now nobody's picking that as the AFC title game.
No. I wouldn't totally sleep on, well, I'm not sleeping on Kansas City, but I wouldn't totally sleep on Baltimore. But no, the AFC is much more down than we thought. And that's good news for the Pats.
Mm-hmm.
Watching the other game last night, and I was more locked in on the Buffalo game, but once that ended, I started locking in more on Caleb Williams v. Jaden Daniels. Entertaining game, shootout-ish type of game last night, you know, 50 points or whatever the total wound up being. You look at Drake May, he has a real argument as the best quarterback in that draft class, Keith.
Oh, yeah.
And I think at bare minimum, and this is people outside of New England would have to bend the knee on this and agree, at bare minimum, the discussion is Jaden Daniels or Drake May. Then it's a gap to your guys, Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, guys like this. It's a drop off after those two. The discussion ends right now today after those two. And look, I'd still lean Jaden Daniels based on the body of work, but May is closing that gap. And as you said earlier today, he's bar none, hands down, unquestionably, been the best quarterback in that draft class through six games this year.
Yeah, that isn't up for debate. But then it's like, all right, do you want to take six games right now and say that is outweighs 17 or what 19 games from Jaden Daniels last year? That's why, like, I'm not ready to go there yet. I think at the end of this season, you're going to have more of a body of work. We'll see how both teams finish, how both players look. But Drake May is a clear cut too. And I was hesitant to do that. I know, you know, locally a lot of people had him over Caleb Williams and Bo Nix. I didn't. For the longest time, I didn't. I like Williams coming into the draft more. He's shown flashes of it, but he hasn't been as consistently good as Drake May or even close. And then Bo Nix doesn't always put up the best numbers, but he made the playoffs last year. He's 4-2 and looks like he's going to make the playoffs again this year. So there's something about him and like just winning games. But Drake May is better than both those guys. Like,
drop back, do it to the other team.
He's honest. He's honest. Little Bo picks at him, but he's 4-2. What, they went 10 games last year? So, like, they're in a good spot. No, but Drake May is playing clearly better than everybody in that class.
I think it's a good quarterback class. You look back at 2018. 2018 is Lamar and Josh Allen and
Baker.
Thank you. Baker and
Sam Darnold.
And
don't sleep on Darnold.
Darnold's a weird one because he's on what number team?
We'll say with Baker.
True.
Baker and Darnold, they were teammates in Carolina.
Right.
They both bounced around.
At least Baker's like really established it in Tampa now for a while, but you're right. Baker bounced around a ton.
Yeah.
2018 is a good quarterback class. 2020 is a good quarterback class. This is a really good quarterback class.
Yeah, it is.
And right now the discussion is Daniels and May. We're both still on the Daniels side of it, but the gap is getting closer every single day.
Yeah.
And it's a real debate.
It's a great class.
But it's those two. That's the debate.
Because Penix looked good last night. Rattler is like hanging in there. He's on a bad team. We just saw him firsthand. He's doing all right. And then I don't like JJ McCarthy, but that's another guy. You might have seven guys like starting next season.
Seven.
A quarter of the league basically is from that draft class.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
It's a good class. Yep. 617-779-7937. You can jump in here on Jones and Keith. We'll circle back to Brian Callahan getting fired in Tennessee. What does it say about Mike Vrabel being hired here? What does it say about the timing of Tennessee deciding to move on from Brian Callahan with Vrabel back in Nashville this weekend? But on the way next, 12:45 on a Tuesday means it's time for the madness. Keep
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year, Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
For madness.
It's time for Kiefer Madness.
Kiefer Madness.
Richard Kiefer, I think it is. Rich Kiefer.
Who is that?
How you doing, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Joshua Adams.
What now?
It's Kiefer Madness.
Where's Kiefer?
Where is he?
Where's Kiefer?
Where is Kiefer?
Hey, Kiefer, you're a douche.
I was doing Junko Inoshima from Danganronpa.
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch.
That's funny.
Yo, Kiefer Madness is so hit or miss.
Kiefer's a nice guy.
Kiefer's a nice guy.
Okay.
Kiefer Madness?
It's Kiefer Madness on WEEI.
I bring it.
The four allegedly got into a fight and a gun was fired. Investigators do not know if the bullets caused any injuries.
He's partially nude, rude, and crude.
Yep, those are four horses inside the Baker Walmart.
Built this giant statue of a human rear end, which he would later load onto his truck and drive down the interstate while headed to court hearings.
Regina.
All right, here we go. Time for the madness on Jones and Keefe, WEEI. And we go to Kentucky.
Ooh.
Yeah, we had a story a long time ago from Kentucky. Remember those guys? They were like two maniac news anchors. It was, the whole thing was about brisket.
Oh.
Remember that? That was with you.
Well,
those guys were going nuts. They were going hog wild.
Where was the porch pooper? Louisville? That's Kentucky.
Oh, was the porch pooper? I thought it was Portland. He's Portland,
Oregon. That's the Portland pooper.
Got it.
Different the porch pooper, I believe, was Louisville.
Maybe the same guy.
Come on.
Very well could be.
Still hasn't been caught.
That's true.
Despite, as you said at the time, a mountain of evidence.
All the DNA possible.
Just so much DNA.
Only DNA left behind. This is different. This is not like that. This is a lot cleaner than that story is, Jones. It is the holiday season, Halloween, just a couple of short weeks away. Hopefully everybody has their outfits picked out and their decorations up. So let's find out what's going on in Kentucky.
Okay.
As we get closer to Halloween, more and more homes are getting really spooky, right, with their decorations while they're preparing for all those trick-or-treaters. And there's a home in northern Kentucky that's actually trying to set a world record.
Trying to set a world record.
I bet. Okay, so you know what you see in the news periodically? These, like, tall Halloween...
those giant skeletons?
Yeah,
they're like
statues,
three stories
skeleton?
High?
Yeah, they are. Are they trying to set up, maybe get the largest one of those?
Oh, the tallest skeleton?
Perhaps.
Could be.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing they probably track.
That'd be a cool thing to be known for.
Yeah.
That's actually trying to set a world record with their display. Alexis Barton is there, right in front of the home right now. All right, okay. So it's not spooky during the day, but what's it look like?
All right.
Really?
Like, well, you guys sent me here.
Editorializing quite a bit there. Yeah.
How about I tell the story?
Yeah.
How about you just throw it to me, and I'll let you know. So now they throw to the on-site reporter who's standing in front of this gentleman's house. Bunch of decorations behind her, and she's going to tell us what's going on.
So right now I'm at this home on Village Green Drive in Cold Springs. And you're right, Trisha, it's not as spooky yet, but you're about to see what it looks like at night. This is one of a kind, incredible...
What? Are we?
Yeah,
it's not nighttime yet.
I don't know. Or maybe they have. Maybe they got some B-roll. Maybe they went out, they recorded, they already got some footage.
I guess they have a little bit of B-roll.
Okay,
not much. Yeah, not much.
This is one of a kind, incredible. Today I got to talk to the man behind it all, Halloween Herm.
Halloween
Herm?
Herm?
Halloween Herm.
Hubie Halloween?
I don't know. Different guy. Okay. Not Salem, Mass.
All right.
So we're going to talk to Halloween Herm?
Sure.
All right.
Today, I got to talk to the man behind it all, Halloween Herm, and he tells me not only is he trying to set that world record, but he's also trying to raise money for kids here in Kentucky.
Okay, that's good. So with
every
God,
year,
good.
We aspire to get bigger and greater as we continue to tell our...
Same.
Yeah.
Same, dude.
I have aspired to that for quite some time.
That's been my New Year's resolution for 12 straight years.
Bigger and
every
greater.
Every year, we aspire to get bigger and greater.
Yep.
Get bigger and greater.
Get in line. Get in line, bud.
Call my guy Dale.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Northeast Men's Health. Uh-huh. Shout out. Yeah.
Good stuff.
As we continue to tell our story and just try to spread joy
For decades, a Cold Springs family has been putting on a massive Halloween show for the whole community. Halloween Herm, who creates the display, says his mom started it all when he was just a little boy.
He lost her in 99 to cancer. So the day she passed, August 18th, is the day we usually start setting up in her memory.
The display is called Dead Spring Cemetery.
Dead Spring Cemetery?
Yeah, in honor of his mom, I guess.
So it starts, they start setting this up August 18th?
October, I thought.
I thought he said August.
Oh, August?
August.
Yeah. Oh, August.
August 18th.
Were you listening? It
was that's like a little. I was thinking in my head October. Right? I'm like, oh, that's coming around the corner.
Right when you August? Start drinking your pumpkin spice latte over there.
Oh, no, not yet. I wait till September 1st. Okay. Everyone knows that about me. But yeah, they're like, August 14th, the neighbors love it. We're like, let's fire up the Halloween stuff. We've got 2 months out.
So yeah, August 14th. My late mother's birthday.
Yeah, that's the time to do it.
She's cheering it on from the sky.
And then she is, and he calls it the cemetery thing? I'm like.
The display is called Dead Spring Cemetery.
Yikes. All right. Dead Mom Cemetery.
No, but he's trying to spread joy. Yeah. So he's like, let's fire up, you know, for 2.5 months, let's have the Halloween stuff up.
Sure.
And that's assuming he takes it down on November 1st, which I'm guessing he doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't sound like the type. No.
Most of the year.
Yeah.
In each year, Halloween Herm picks a different charity to support. He puts out a donation bin for visitors who want to contribute. This year, he's working with Brett Rushman to raise funds for the Northern Kentucky Children's Advocacy Center.
We need more positivity for children. So any way that we can help them grow up in a better environment is what we want to do.
While the display works to raise money, Halloween Herm has also reached out to the Guinness Book of World Records, hoping his home could be the first of its kind to win a world record.
Oh. Okay, all right, so now we're getting somewhere. Halloween Herm.
We're ruling out its biggest skeleton.
It doesn't sound like it. So he's like, Guinness Book of World Records, they keep track of all kinds of records, then your name is there forever. Until somebody gets wind of it and then decides to beat it.
Right.
Bring somebody out and shows them that they can. But, all right, what can it be?
We discovered that there's no record for the amount of props in a Halloween display.
Just sheer number of props?
Did you get a lawyer for that?
We discovered? How did you find that out? I feel like they have these shows.
Every Guinness Book of World Records.
We hired a legal team to pour over the data. Yeah.
I think this guy's probably in a lot of trouble. I feel like there are TV shows that are just about Christmas decorations and like Halloween decorations, and those people go wild. There's a guy in my town that's got probably
given this a run for its money.
I would think. Let's see what he's got.
We discovered that there's no record for the amount of props in a Halloween display. So we have over 300. So we thought it was an interesting factoid, and fingers crossed we'll know sometime in 2026.
300 props?
That does not.
I don't know if that would come in top three in my street. There are some wild ones. I give credit. There's like two streets over, there's like two houses that both do Christmas and Halloween.
Nice.
Full go.
Nice.
And if you were out there counting props, they'd probably beat this guy's.
It's not top two or three on my street.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well. But they need to wait for this gentleman to declare. What is it again? Halloween Herm?
Halloween Herm.
You wait for Halloween Herm to declare. Put all his cards on the table. How many props you got?
301.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
That's the world record guy. The Guinness Book guy has to show up and count them.
Whip them props out.
Yeah.
You slap them out on the table. Let us know how many, and then people on your street can go break the record.
Seems like an odd world record because you could also have, like, you could just dump a bag of candy corn out and be like, this is all part of it. These are all
52,
separate.
52, 54, 56.
You start counting by twos. That's how many you have at that point. You got to start counting by twos.
Halloween Herm says he wants the decorations to have a deeper meaning for people. The display changes throughout the season, and he recently added a tribute to Taylor Swift.
First of all,
throughout the season.
I was going to say, there's multiple seasons. If you put them up in August, he has probably his summer decorations, his fall decorations. Maybe
but stick it's around for winter. Halloween, I thought.
It's just Halloween.
So his summer Halloween?
Yeah. Well, is Taylor Swift Halloween?
No. I'm saying his, no. Does he have, like, witches dressed in, like, beach attire? And then they switch over to the ball?
Skeletons on a beach chair.
Yeah. I did see skeletons. I saw some, like, skulls. You might have had, like, a pumpkin and a witch.
Okay.
Halloween Herm says he wants the decorations to have a deeper meaning for people. The display changes throughout the season, and he recently added a tribute to Taylor Swift and included the Reds after their playoff run.
Oh.
He's a Reds fan.
Shout out Reds.
He's a big Reds fan. Cruz.
He must be Louisville, that end of Kentucky.
Barry Larkin, Rob Dibble. These are some of his favorites.
It's dynamic. So if something happens relevant in the news or a celebratory moment with a friend or a neighbor, they might get a skeleton named after them, like awesome Alexis Martin.
So now he's flirting with the reporter.
Oh, that was her.
That's her. awesome. So now he's hitting Alexis on the reporter.
Martin, you got a skeleton.
Yeah.
It's very flattering.
He's like, hey, you came out. You want to stick around? I have a lot of ciders. He's like, what?
He's
like,
be.
You know, I'd be like, awesome Alexis Martin.
Represented by some bones in my yard.
I noticed no ring on that finger. If you want to maybe stick around, put up some decorations. She's like, what the hell is this? Let's see what her response is to him straight up hitting on her.
Skeleton named after them, like awesome Alexis Martin.
The display will be up and changing through November 1st, so there's still...
Yikes, Tom!
Big yikes, Tom. Reporting back from the news van, heading back to the station now, Alexis Martin.
Taking out a restraining order, Alexis Martin.
Plenty of time for you to come out and see it. Now, Halloween Herm does ask if you come visit, you stick to respecting everyone's boundaries. He has
Makes
a lot
sense.
Of neighbors around here, so stay parking in the road and stand in sidewalks, not on driveways. Reporting in Cold Springs, I'm Alexis Martin, Fox 19 Now.
Awesome. Alexis, thank you.
How did she not sign off awesome Alexis Martin?
Awesome Alexis
How
Martin.
How did she not at least do that?
That's because she is rejecting his advances.
Yeah, but you want to keep
Halloween Herm.
You want to keep him on the hook a little bit.
Oh, I got a date this weekend. Hey, who are you going out with? You know Halloween Herm? Like, yeah, of course I know Halloween Herm. He puts up his decorations in August. Everybody knows this guy. Can't stand him.
She didn't do the interview. She was reading the script she was given.
The audacity on this guy, though. He's like, everybody come and check out my...
But
don't you dare stand in my neighbor's driveway.
Follow the rules.
Stay parked in the middle of the road? Is that what I
heard?
I
feel like parking in the road is not good advice.
Like, this is not...
Yeah.
The neighbors cannot be fans of this.
I don't think that's a good idea. No.
So stay parking in the road and stand in sidewalks, not on driveways. Yeah.
Just leave your car.
Just leave your car.
Leave your car. Wherever.
Everybody's double parked.
What a nightmare. Just, you want to be like somewhat close so you can drive by these houses, but you don't want them on your actual street.
No.
That's a nightmare.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Come swing by, see the Taylor Swift decorations. Like, I thought this was scary. What is this?
Yeah. It's all her reviews. That's what it is.
Oh, that's
That'll
true.
Fit right in.
That new album.
Oh, my God. Oh, is it
dead on arrival?
Like you read about
it.
Yikes. Eek City
Eeks.
For that thing.
One word review.
Eeks. Yeah, that was Rolling Stone on the new album.
Yeah, they hated it.
So there you go. That is,
Eeks.
That is the madness, Kiefer Madness. Every Tuesday, most Thursdays here on Jones and Keith.
Awesome Alexis Martin.
Get back to the Pats.
Back off.
And Titans this weekend. Brian Callahan out. What's to say about Mike Vrabel? That's next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.